Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Christine Blaisdell, the expert authority coach. Christine is a dynamic speaker, best-selling author, and media powerhouse with over 25 years in the game. She's worked with giants like Microsoft, AOL, Pacifica, Radio, and helped thousands of entrepreneurs build powerful brands and unshakable confidence. Christine is a master at turning your voice into impact through podcasting, visibility strategies, and fearless messaging. Named a podcast icon of influence, her best-selling itty-bitty podcast book proves big things come in bold packages. I've asked her to join us here today to share her story and help us better share ours with fire and focus. So, Christine, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I love that introduction. Thanks, Daryl.
Hey, you're welcome. You're welcome. Bills, the check, the bill's in the mail. No,
yes, the check is in the
mail. So how did you even get into this space? Influencer and visibility and obviously media and publishing. Is this something your parents did and you are carrying the torch forward?
No. My dad was a teacher and a football coach. And my mom was just this beautiful woman who looked like Cher. You know what? It actually started my love affair with the world of audio and I guess content creation started when I was really young. I think it was like 10 years old. And most kids would be very excited if they got a puppy or a bike. I got a cassette recorder, the kind you push down and little cassettes. And I thought it was the best thing in the world. I got that for Christmas morning and I just lost my mind. I was like, oh my gosh. So I would record and make stories. And my mom and dad got divorced when I was little. No sad story here. Thank God they divorced each other. But I would wait for her as long as I could at night before she could come home. And she would come home very late because she worked as a waitress. And so what I would do is I would start to get sleepy and I'd say, oh, I'll record stories. So I would record stories and pretend like I was Christopher Robin or something. I would make up stuff and I would leave these messages so that when she got home, she could play them and listen to her daughter.
Oh, that is so adorable.
I know. And that started my love affair really with audio and recording. And then it wasn't until I was many years later, I got into broadcast journalism and got on the microphone. And it was that Hollywood story where the star of the show, the host of the radio show can't do it. They broke their leg or they've got the flu. And they said to me, you need to do the show. You need to go on air and do the show. And I was like, I'm a producer. I'm a writer. I'm behind the scenes. I don't want to do this. And they go, no, you have to because it's 4 o'clock. People are on the freeway. You need to go. And I did reluctantly. And then the on-air light went on and that magical moment happened where I went, oh, this is good. I like this feeling. And I just started talking to I felt like nobody because I was in a studio, but that's how I started just my on-air broadcasting. And I loved it. And I loved connecting with the audience without even seeing them or touching them. I felt that connection. And then as that happened, I went into podcasting and all that good stuff. But I really love teaching people the things that I've learned that have helped me through my life. And being in broadcast journalism for so long, for 20 years, I've had every pitch. I've had everybody say, hey, I need to be on your radio show, interview me. And I know what makes a good interview. I know what makes a good story. I know what makes a good sale. And I think those years of my experience, I can help people now say, hey, if you want to get on a podcast show or if you want to create your own even better, here are some tips. Here are some things that you can do to get your message out.
I love that. I love that. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in figuring all that stuff out? It came to you naturally and it was just sunshine and rainbows and the pearly gates opened up and money rained from the skies. Is that?
No, there's always trials and tribulations and there's always the stuff that goes wrong. I remember many times when I was supposed to have a guest on and they would be my main guest for the show and they wouldn't show up. Or I actually produced Roseanne Barr for a year. And I'll tell you, if I can produce Roseanne Barr, I can do anything. Okay. There would be times it would be like 5 minutes to five. And she was 5 o'clock drive time, which is the biggest listened to show. And it'd be 5 minutes to five. And I'm looking in the parking lot and I'm like, she's not in the studio. She doesn't have her headphones on. She's not here. I don't know where she is. And then I'd have to start playing the music and I'm like calling her on the phone And a lot of times she'd come in, she'd slide in because she'd go down to the Italian restaurant before and have a couple Chiantis. She'd come in and she'd be like ready to go. But one time I remember the show was starting and I was like, I called her on the phone in the producer's box and I said, Roseanne, where are you? And she goes, I'm at home. And she lived near the airport, near LAX, and our station was not near there. And I said, you need to be here. You're supposed to be on air. And she goes, you do the show. And I said, Roseanne, I can't do the show. It's the Roseanne Barr show. And I'm not Roseanne Barr. And she goes, I'm drinking wine. You do it. So I ended up doing it. And I had to open it up to listener phone calls. And just, I turned it around. I said, everybody call in and tell me why you love Roseanne Barr. And this was when she was in good graces with the world and everything.
Right.
But oh, yeah. I think I got a few gray hairs out of that.
That's so funny. That's fantastic. So going on from that, what are some of the lessons that you've learned? What are some of the key tenets and key?
Yeah.
The fundamentals.
The fundamentals are this, and this pertains to whatever business you're in, whatever field of industry that you're in. I've found that there's a pillar of three things that people want and desire. And it goes in no particular order, but really the hierarchical order would be they want health, wealth, and love. And health is, of course, vitally important so that we can breathe and walk on this earth and enjoy the people that are around us. So that's a major priority for people. That's why the supplements and vitamin industry and health and fitness industry is a multi-billion dollar industry. Wealth, of course. There's your LinkedIn thing is flooded with inbox of people saying, I can make you 6-7 figure coach.
Pay me $1. I'll show you how to make 100. Get 100 people to pay you $1.
Yes. That's why I have a love hate relationship with LinkedIn. Yeah. It's mostly hate because I get lots of those things in. But wealth isn't just, of course, it's not just about the balance of your bank account. Wealth of time in order to spend with your loved ones, right? And have a holiday once in a while or just to go on the beach and enjoy yourself. So wealth has a few different dynamics. But then the last one is love. And love can mean, of course, a romantic, finding the one, the prince or the princess or the queen or whatever you want to call the person. I call my wife my human. And I had not married. I've been in relationships, but I never married anybody until I was in my late 50s, mid 50s, late 50s. I don't even know how old I am. Mid 50s. But I was like, you're my human. Tag, you're it. You're stuck with me. So that's a romantic and deep love, but also love of our parents, feeling that love. My mother loved me so much, felt it in every single cell of my body. I knew that this woman just thought I was the most amazing thing. And that helped growing up, that encouragement that you can do anything. And that's the American thing, right? That's also Americans have this undeniable, you can do it. And we're rooting for you. Come on, you can do it. I live in Australia now. And when I first got here, they didn't have that. It's a bit of, hey, mate, don't be too big for your britches. Tone it down. It's getting better now. But Americans just, I miss aspects of America.
Sure. I do. Sure.
I miss Mexican food.
Yeah, I know. We talked about this before. There's pros and cons to everything. One of the biggest benefits of traveling internationally is that lens. I remember when I was in Japan. I lived in Japan for 3 years and I was waiting for the subway to go to work in the morning. And they had the like a little convenience stand on the track, right? Where you're waiting for your train. And they would have whatever, your coffee in a can and the newspapers, all that. And I remember this is George Bush Jr. was president at the time. And for me, it was such a shock because I remember looking at the newspapers and I think I was like my jaw dropped because I could see there was the Toronto Star, the New York Times, Reuters, and Al Jazeera. And all of the first three, and Al Jazeera was bought in whatever, 2010 by a US Marine. But before it was bought by US Marine, it was independent. And I was so shocked because it was all Bush talking about Iran trying to get these weapons of mass destruction. Like they want to build nuclear bombs and destroy the West. That was like the thing. And it was like his face and angry and whatever that was. But then the Al Jazeera, all it was a copy of the president's speech transcript of Iran. And I'm not saying they're good. I'm not saying I have an opinion, but I just never considered. It's always like they call that a paradigm shift. You know, there's a story Tony Robbins has where this guy is on a train and these kids are crying and the dad's just not paying attention. He's like mad. He's like, "Hey, take control of your kids." And then the guy's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. We just left the hospital. Their mother just died. Sorry." And then it was like the guy has a paradigm shift where he's "Oh, they're disturbing my," but like the paradigm
Yeah.
shift. And for me, reading the president's speech, whether he was telling the truth or lying, his speech was about, why do our kids have to do their homework in candlelight? Why aren't we allowed to develop and afford our citizens the luxuries of first world nations? Why are you so chosen or so special that you get these privileges when we are fully capable of providing them for ourselves? And this was like his speech. And I had never even thought of that. I'd never considered that perspective. And so when you live in different countries,
Yeah.
get that lens, you get that cult, and it's so shocking. I feel like every time, and there's visiting, like, you go spend 2 weeks, or I spent a month, and then there's living.
Living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I had
But
to live in Japan.
how cool is it that they had all those different newspapers, all
Yeah.
those different, those are
Yeah.
all different perspectives
Oh,
and
yeah.
worldviews. Being in America, you don't have those worldviews.
That was the thing, is because all the other newspapers were like, Toronto Sun is, Toronto Star is Canada, Reuters is like Britain or international, and then New York Times is the States. So I was like, oh, that's like a media bubble. And then this one's actually the outside of that. And that was said, Japan is a trip. I'm gonna have to put explicit on this podcast, but I remember at the grocery store, because of the language barrier and the cultural barrier, Japan gets things that pass through that would never fly in almost any other country. Like, I remember I was going to the grocery store one day, and I'm just in this little supermarket and I'm shopping, and this mom's beside me with her little 3-year-old girl. And I'm like, "Hi, little girl." And then I hear the radio. It's exhibits like, "Choke me, spank me, pull my hair. I don't wanna love you. I just wanna F you." And so, like, I'm just, and then this girl voice, "Choke me, spank me, pull." And I'm looking around the store, like, is this a joke? Is there the reality TV gonna pop out somewhere? But everyone's just like shopping because nobody knows what they're saying. And there's no radio edit versions in Japan. They just play it. I was just, but that's how this stuff happens, right? They just get it from here, get it from there. I don't know if that's still the way in Japan now, but that paradigm shift. I had to live in Japan for a year and a half where I realized how rude I was being, just being a friendly Canadian in Japan. Because in our cultures, you have rude, casual, and polite. You have three layers of etiquette. And in Japan, they have five. They have like rude, casual, polite, more polite, the most polite. And I had a buddy that lived there 16 years, and he had said on his wedding day, it was like a scene from a movie, because he went to bed the night before, like talking to people, and he speaks relatively fluently. And on the day of his wedding day, he's like, I was ushered through the day, but half the time I didn't know what people were saying because they were speaking to me with the highest level of etiquette, and he'd never heard it before. So he was
Oh,
just going through his wedding day, and
wow.
people are like crying and making things, and he's, I have no idea what anyone's saying right now, because they never really heard that lens.
And you don't, yeah, and you don't experience that until you do step outside the States and you go, oh, there's different perspectives. Okay.
And so, how does that translate? Let's tie the knot on this here. How did this come into sharing your own story? How does it come to getting your brand and your message out there, knowing that we're all multi-dimensional people, and there's different parts of us? There's our dating site profiles. There's our professional LinkedIn profile with our dress shirt. There's the family goofy photos of us on this other place. There's the conspiracy theory stuff we subscribe to, but we don't want to admit publicly. Like, how do you consolidate all that?
I'll admit some things publicly. That's all right.
Sure.
No, you know what? I think it's about being authentic, right? And it's about being relatable. The days of the perfectionism and the Kardashian, look what's happening in Hollywood. It's all crumbling, right? This the untouchable, the oh my goodness, the celebrity. And it's just like one celebrity out there's being knocked off by their own demise, by their for the stuff that they're doing. I have never seen such backlash against Katy Perry in my entire life, except for when she decided to go 11 minutes into the sky. And so you see it just crumbling. And what's happening right now is that people are craving authenticity and relatability. Sure, we still will watch the rich and famous almost like a train wreck to see they're not happy. They just got different problems, but it's not as something that we are really craving as much as a population. Now we want that authenticity and even moments of vulnerability. And so I share with my clients and I share on some of my social media some of my vulnerable moments so that they know that I'm human. I'm not some perfect thing.
That's important. What would you recommend to someone who's starting or struggling right now? They feel like they've got to get out more. They got to get known more. They're lost in obscurity.
It depends on the person. It depends on their personality, right? One of the things that I really try and encourage my clients to do is to find the platform that they feel most at home at. Even if your potential customers or clients, even if they're not there, you want to have your training ground. In other words, you're going to ride your little training bike, right? You got your training wheels on your bike. You're not going to just go ride a 10-speed or a mountain bike right away. Mm. You need to develop yourself and develop your comfortableness on camera if you can, on video. And if being on video and being on camera is not something that you love, then see if how you express yourself through writing. That might be something that's magical to you, then go that direction. Or it might even be something where maybe you don't want to be on camera and you don't want to write, but you can speak and you have power in your voice and you have either a story to tell or you want to inspire people or motivate them, then use the platforms that we have, which are podcasting is great. Mm. You can be a guest on a podcast, but even better, you can have your own. And that's a great marketing tool. But just know you're not going to retire the money's not going to just pour in overnight. Mm. I think they did a study and it's 7 or 10 episodes or something. If someone starts a podcast, that's like the average when they will quit. And I'm like, yeah, if you quit after 7 episodes, you're not even giving it a chance.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because whatever it is that you want to teach the world or help, or if you want to serve an audience, you blew it. Right. Mm. So I would encourage people to find that platform. So it might be writing, it might be speaking, it might be doing videos, it might be on being on camera to also focus on the audience. So when I write a book, I don't really even write. I'm not a writer, I'm a speaker. So I take my content, I repurpose my speaking, my webinars, my workshops, I turn them into books that people will enjoy. But I find I like the process of it, it's enjoyable. And I also like doing videos. So find that bicycle that you like to ride and ride it. Mm. And just don't think that you're going to become a Lamont. You're not going to be in some huge race the next day.
I love that. Training. Now, what about monetization of that? Like, where does it fit into your marketing mix or your strategy? For someone that's been in broadcasting so long, I think for a lot of people, it can feel like a one-way communication channel, right? Mm-hmm. Especially putting out a podcast. You don't necessarily get people replying. There's no real play, maybe on a social media platform, but even then you don't necessarily always show up in all your fans' feeds. Where does it fit in? How do you use it?
I tell all my clients, if you're going to write a book or if you're going to create a podcast or create content, use it as a marketing tool. Don't just say that you're going to rely completely on that for all your income. Okay. Because first of all, that's a lot of pressure. Second of all, you need time to develop your brand. As an expert authority coach, I will tell them you want to build up, you want to ramp up your expert authority through these marketing tools. A best-selling book is a great marketing tool. A podcast is a great marketing tool. You want to be careful not to be too salesy and too pushy because people smell it and they run away. The great thing about what you do is you showcase yourself, Daryl. You showcase who you are and you're real. You are really you're great.
Very intense.
But you use this great platform. And so people get to know you with each episode. They go, God, that guy, he said something about being in the Philippines. And I really dig how he has that perspective. I can trust him. So you're developing your expert authority just by doing these shows and profiling your guests, people coming on and sharing their wisdom with the world. So it's the way that I look at it is to use it as a marketing tool to enhance your expert authority-ness. Then when you want to get booked on shows or you want to start offering workshops or courses, then you have something to stand on. If people, as you say, I say, Google yourself. If you Google yourself and they ain't nothing out there, or it's just some Facebook page that you had so your cousins could keep up with you, then you need to start working on developing your expert authority. You need to start working on things so that people will go, I feel good about giving money to this person to be my coach or to do whatever service. But you have to build that confidence and you have to build that trust. That's really important.
I love that. So it's really a credibility tool. It's almost a results in advance. And I think one of the things that I heard, I don't know from who, but they said, put your personnel in your content because you don't want people you won't get along with coming to you because it's just going to be problems anyhow. So if you've got a controversial opinion on something, it's almost better to put it out there. So that way you can't walk all day on your tiptoes and you can't hang out all day in a squat either. You have to be comfortable. So you don't want to be around people you have to be on eggshells on. And I think that's as self-employed individuals. That's one of the perks is that it's once you've got roof and ramen taken care of, it's really about designing what kind of people do I want to work with and how do I want to serve the world? And then trying to do your best to align with that.
Absolutely. Cause not every, there's been people that have come to me that I didn't want as my client because whatever you're doing if you're working in a restaurant or if you have your own business, it's an exchange of energy and time, right?
Yes.
So I'm giving you my time. I'm giving you my wisdom. I'm giving you my expertise and my experience and my knowledge in exchange for something, right? And most of the time that would be in exchange for money, but sometimes I'll do a barter. I'll work with people and I'll go, you've got something really cool. Yeah. I'll give you this if you give me that.
Yeah.
And we're like, yay, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that the people that you bring into your business are people that you want to spend time with. Mm. Very lucky that all of my clients, I really like spending time with them.
Yep.
So it's important to put that out there, who you are as a person and how you coach, how you do business. I like to keep things simple, easy, and fun. Because if it's hard and technical and difficult, I don't want to do it. So I'm thinking that my clients don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Right? I put it out there. That's how we're going to work. We're going to keep it simple, easy, and yes, we're going to have fun.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's very appealing. Are there any specific skills or behaviors that you think are most important long-term?
You know what? If you're going to do the solo thing, if you're going to be like an entrepreneur and things like that, you have to know how to, number one, you have to really like yourself. Okay. There's some people that don't like themselves. You have to really like yourself in your own company. And you also need to be able to work without that structure. Some people, they have to have that water cooler. They need to have that job that they drive to and that they go in the office and they have the office dynamics and then they can work. I've been very lucky. I've been able to be by myself. I've been able to create lots and lots of things by being by myself. And I prefer it. I prefer to work by myself. One-on-one with a client is fine, but I don't having a bunch of people in an office in a small space talking and eating. And no, it's not my jam, but you have to be able to feel comfortable being with yourself and you have to like who you are. That's the most important thing. Yeah.
Are there habits? Are there like daily habits or weekly habits that you think are most important? If you're trying to make it,
I think having a real good handle on your calendar is important. And I find that for me, because I'm in Australia, my Mondays are my slow days because it's Sunday in America and most of my clients are American. So my Mondays are like my slow days. That's and nice. I say slow, meaning I don't have a lot of client bookings on Mondays. So my Mondays are my catch up days.
Yeah.
So that means podcast episodes that need to be edited, I do it then. If I want to investigate something, if I want to learn a new piece of software or tool, I do that on a Monday. If I need to go do my errands and I need to maybe straighten up the house a little bit, I'll do that on a Monday because it's a day that's not crazy. Tuesday is nuts. Because Tuesday is Monday in America and that's when everybody wants to get started on things. So my Tuesdays are usually pretty booked out, but I find that having that calendar and also blocking out time just to be is really important. We tend to want to be busy all the time. And I think that makes for a very boring human. So I think it's important to block out time to be with your loved ones, to spend time with your kids, your family, your spouse, your dog. Your dog always looks at you when you walk by thinking that you're going to pay attention to them. And when you're working all the time, they just look up, like, oh, she's still working.
Fine. Yeah.
All right.
That's right. Yeah.
So have that time to enjoy life. you want to be well-rounded.
I think that's really important, especially in today's day and age where we're always plugged into something. You can always be plugged into a podcast or social media or TV or a movie or that. Silence is as much music as noise is. Without the silence, there would be no melody. It would just be a bunch of static. And yes. I think that's a really great tip that you just gave there. I think that's really powerful.
It's also where a lot of times epiphanies will come in, and a lot of times mm-hmm. things will, when you don't have, I'll go to the gym, and like when my wife goes to the gym with me, and she'll have her music. She's got to have her music on, and all the time, something's got to be playing. And I'll put my headphones on, but I don't play anything. I put my headphones on to muffle the sound of the grunting, the guys in the, with the weights and all that stuff.
That's
and
me.
The music playing over overhead. But I like to hear my own breathing. I like to, it gives me that little quiet zone where all of a sudden I'll think of something. I'll go, oh my gosh, I have a brilliant idea for a new program. Or even though I'm trying not to work, ideas just pop up in your head. Or a book. The last book that I wrote came from one of those moments where I wasn't doing anything. Mm-hmm. And it just was like, oh, what are the most asked questions that I get? Oh, I should put that in a book.
You should put that in a book. That is a great idea.
Yeah. So that's why I think it's important for those quiet moments, because you never know what you get out of it.
I think that's really powerful. One, you mentioned taking care of your health. We talked about that at the beginning of the call, how that's so mission critical. So mission critical. And a lot of people don't even consider it. Health is wealth. They say a healthy man has 1,000 wishes. A sick man has one.
Oh, deep.
I think
Daryl's really dropping the wisdom on this one. That is deep.
That's the name of the game. You got to stay in the game to keep playing it. I know people that sacrificed their health to make the money, and then they spent all the money to get their health back. So that's almost myself. Like, I'm living my best life these days. I've kicked my addictions. I'm something like 4 years sober now. I used to smoke a ton of weed. I grew up with a hippie. I was in Canada. Weed was legal before it was legal. I always had a love-hate relationship with it. And then at some point when I lived in California, it's like my relationship with it really changed. And then it became, I don't know, it became a life inhibitor. And I almost live like a monk now. I say that to my friends. My buddy's got this phrase, he calls it monk mode. And I'm like, bro, I've been in monk mode now for 6-7 years. Like, my days are planned in 10, 30 minute blocks. I schedule off time, like you talk about, prioritize health. I get a 90 minutes to two and a half hours of exercise a day. I get my 10,000 steps. I get my 7+ hours of sleep. My diet is, compared to most people I know, impeccably clean. And I'm like you, I don't work with anyone I don't want to work with. And I don't mess with anything, no matter how profitable it is, if I don't feel like it's benefiting humanity or a community. You're not going to save the world, but maybe there's a community that you can serve. And I really love that. So I think that some of what you said is really important, to be in tune with yourself, your health, focus on what you want. When you work with clients, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see them making?
Oh, underestimating themselves, I would say.
What do you mean?
A lot of times they don't, dreaded imposter syndrome, and who will want to hear from me? Who's going to want to take my advice? Or I'm too old. I'm too fat. I'm too this, I'm too that. And it stops so much amazing content and creativity. It just kills it. Uh-huh. And I want to just say to people that are experiencing that, the thing that I do when I have somebody that's experiencing that and they're too afraid because they're going to get judged, right? Mm. People are going to judge them. They're going to think this of them or that. And I say, get out of your own way. First of all, it's not about you. Okay. It's actually about what you can do for people. Mm-hmm. And if you focus on your audience or you focus on your clients and not, you will be extraordinary and you will actually make an impact. And that's how you're going to be remembered. That's what your reputation is going to be. That your reputation is going to be what she followed through. And she really came through for me. And I learned so much from this person. Instead of having that icky vibe, that desperate scarcity mindset, that, because we can feel it. We can absolutely feel it. And especially if you're not confident in your skill set. I want somebody who's confident, who says, I'm really freaking great at what I do. It's not being egotistical. It's saying, I know I'm very good. I want an open heart surgeon. I want the best. I want somebody that says, I'm really good at doing that.
Yeah.
Not just, oh, I don't know. You might want to work with me. I try hard. No, I want somebody who's really good. And then getting out of your own way with those old stories that we play in our head, that doesn't help anybody, especially the clients or the audience that you want to help.
I think that's important to mention because it's about them at the end of the day. I think a lot of us, I learned this in sales training, like people, and I felt like this, you get on a call with someone, maybe you're going to do business together and you do the song and dance and your shiny dancy bear and they're not interested in you. It's almost a personal attack because it's what, but me. And you have to realize this has nothing to do with you. It's all about them and their needs and their wants. And it's also about the solution, not you. Yes. When you look up Entrepreneur Dictionary, it doesn't say the person who unlocks the door, turns on the lights, mops the floor, unclogs the toilet, calls the leads, does the sales, does the account. That's not what it says. It's a person who organizes a business or businesses, who assumes on or takes on risk to produce a product or service. And that's what it is. You're trying to solve a problem for all a company is a group of people who solve a problem for another group of people. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what a company is. And so when these people come on, it's not about you and that. It's about this is the solution that we have. And this is how we've tested it. And this is how it works. And then it's about the person that's considering buying it and their situation, what they like, don't like. And if it's a matchmaking thing, is it a fit? If it's not a fit, and you got to separate yourself from that. I think that's really important. I think that's part of why, like you mentioned, people get caught up in imposter syndrome. It's not about you. Can you do the result? And a lot of people, we have so much entertainment in our lives. And if you look at the definition of entertain, it's to hold the attention of. And it's very profitable to hold people's attention. Everything is partially an attention game. And in some ways, this has been a major failing of our education system in that where people have been hit over the head and brainwashed and fed Adderall or Ritalin just to sit down and obey orders and do what you're told and listen and this. And we forget that we're actually here to achieve something and create something and build something and that we're going to die. I'm going to die. I don't know about you, but
I'll die. Eventually. Yes.
I'm not running towards it, but I'm very aware of my mortality. I've had incidents. I lost my ability to walk for a couple of weeks. I'm very aware that my time is finite here. And I realize that, especially because I have kids, but even if you don't, I need to achieve things for my bloodline. Like my ancestors, okay, go back hundreds of thousands of years. They all bled, cried, suffered, and worked their asses off so I could be here today. And I am the peak, the tip of the spear. And that it's important that what I do pushes things forward. And even if it's not my bloodline for humanity, because there's no guarantee we're going to be here in another 1,000 years. And that's when it's so easy to be complacent and soft. And especially when we're competing with other humans, none of your competitors are going to tell you to not take a day off. They're all going to go, yeah, you should. You deserve a rest. You work so hard. Why don't you just rest while I do another lap and make you eat my dust? So we're in this weird thing where people have been made soft. And it's, and in some ways, it's a massive disservice. And so you talk about the imposter syndrome and that. And part of it is the change. I had to talk with a lady today, how expensive housing is. And in the 1910s and 20s, I believe, the average annual income in North America was 33% the cost of a house. So the average 1 year salary was about 33% of the cost of the average house. And today it's 8 to 12%.
Ooh, wow. Yeah.
And so everyone's in this and it's incredibly profitable. And that has worked out so well for some people in terms of making a bunch
banks.
Of profit, right? And I think COVID was a massive wake up call for people. And if it hasn't been, it should have been that. A lot of people are sitting around comfortable when you don't have time to be comfortable. I don't know if people realize that, but you were either mandated or forced to do things you perhaps didn't want to do or didn't agree with because you didn't want to be stuck living under a bridge. And if you're still in that same situation, it's your own fault. You're vulnerable doing that again. My last weekend, I know it's your interview. I'm going to shut up at some point. Forgive me. But
okay.
Last weekend, there was a home. What do you call that? A homecoming, home welcome. My wife's father just finished building a house he's been working on for 4 years. He's been building it himself. Wow. 6-bedroom, 4-bath, 1-story house. He's been a farmer his whole life. Now, my wife and I are developing 3 pieces of land. And she's got a small piece on this kind of family. It's been family plot, but it's been sold off and different relatives, whatever. But there's this little 500 square meter part that she had on the edge. And what did we do with it? We planted 800 dragon fruit on that. And her dad, I think, was inspired because he's been like a crop farmer, like corn and sugarcane and things you plant. And then, you know, it's done and you got to plant something new. And I said, I'm way too lazy for that. I want to plant something that I plant once and I take care of it and it makes me money for the rest of my life. And so we planted 800 dragon fruit, and he's gone and he's taken that. And it's like almost to outdo me. He's planted, I don't even know how many, but at
a
least
thousand,
at least 50 papaya trees, banana trees. He's got a whole food forest he's planted. And now, and then he's got goats and pigs and chickens. And now he's got the house built. And I gave him the solar kit that he needs for it. So he's got those panels, the battery, all the inverter, all that stuff. And I'm like, it's all paid off. There's no debt. There's no debt. And we're at this homecoming or whatever party. Over 150 people came through. I step outside. There's two dozen kids under 10 running around the farm, chasing my dog, playing with my dog, chasing the pigs and the chickens and the goats. And there's all these people coming through, and there was so much food. We fed the whole neighborhood. And I'm like, this is like it. This is a legacy. This you can hand over and go, hey, like you can come here any day, anytime. We got lots of room. We got 6 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms. You can come here. This is home. You'll be safe. We need some food. We're just going to walk out there and pick it from the tree.
Just grab it. Yeah.
And people are instead, you look at like the norm, it's like pushing, hey, you want to live in this condo. Oh, you want to get to the penthouse of this condo so you can pay your fucking condo fees for life and your water bill and your electric bill and your insurance bill. And if you miss any of those, we'll take your condo from you that you're on a
take
mortgage.
It. Exactly.
Your death pledge, my mortgage pledge till death that I got to pay for 30 years. And if I have a bad 6 months over a 30-year period, I lose it all. This is nonsense. And people are so tripped up and so enchanted by false, I don't want to say false idols, but false goals, fool's gold on this stuff.
And it's been set up that way. It's been set up that way by banking, by banks.
Yeah.
If you think about it too, it's a crime that you could pay on a house 20, 30 years and you miss a payment and then they can just take it.
They take it
and not give you anything back. It's, to me, that's like a mob deal.
Yep.
And also you think about it in when, who makes money really, who makes a lot of money with war?
Oh,
now
yeah.
The military weapons manufacturers,
that's
but
right.
The banks make money because they got a loan.
Both sides.
Imaginary money.
Both sides. And they loan to a government that uses your birth certificates as collateral. We've got this many taxpayers certified.
Yes.
And so we're eligible for this much in financing. Usury. So this goes back to the values that made the West great. And a lot of people want to get into it. And a couple of things that are really prevalent today that were not there when it made our current civilization the pinnacle of what it is today. And one of those is usury, which it's not approved. It's not allowed in Islam. It's not allowed in Catholicism. Usury is a debt-based system. If governments weren't enabled to do usury, they wouldn't be allowed to print money to pay for bills. They'd have to balance the budgets. You wouldn't have 30-year mortgages. This is sort of stuff that we've adopted all these values to our detriment. They're non-flourishing values. They're non-human flourishing values. I'm not trying to hate on anyone. I'm not trying to pass judgment on anyone. I am in the business of survival. And I think everyone should be free to make their own decisions. Of course, let adults do what they want, leave the kids the fuck alone. And in between, if you want to commit suicide, like it's up to you. Obviously, we want to save as many people as we can. But we talked about this at the beginning of the call. I think that's part of where we're at right now is we're at a crossroads where sometimes it's like, yeah, okay, if people want to buy cigarettes, they should be allowed to buy cigarettes. That's great. But should we be hiding and publishing fake data on stuff like that? And I'm using that as an analogy, but there's all sorts of, you look at Fruit Loops in America versus Fruit Loops in another country, the ingredients are very
different. Ingredients.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So some of this stuff, it's like, hey, we need to have a conversation about this. And,
but people don't know that they haven't realized that because they haven't been educated. And
right. And
if you're ignorant of a situation, you don't know. Look, they were building, they had asbestos like throughout the houses and people were going through them. I saw an advertisement the other day. It was for linoleum for your kitchen floor. And it was asbestos. And it was even in the title of the name of the, asbestos lined linoleum. And you see a woman placing it there and she's like this. And I think you're right. And I think what's happening, we're headed to a different world and the old system is dying. And when the old system dies, just like parasites in the body, it's going to get funky.
Yeah.
And it's going to get funky. We've already seen it with the whole COVID thing, how some countries reacted and what they did. And now the saber rattling that goes on and the tariffs and the thing. And I think it's a very important time right now for us to look to each other to also, because we got to rely on each other. Yeah. Going alone is not going to work anymore. Right. And we need to start thinking outside the box and being smart about how we live, how we raise our kids too. Yeah.
And also, what outcomes do we want? I think that's really important because a lot of stuff gets into tribalism. This person's good, that person's bad. When I think at some point at the end of the day, we'd be like, what's the end result we're trying to get? And then we could talk about the different strategies to get there. Begin with the end in mind. What does success look like here? What are we trying to achieve? Instead of this versus that, abortion versus no abortion. Okay, cool. Whatever. What's the end result? Can we talk about what the end result we want to be? And then different strokes for different folks. Sure. But at least if we all can agree on what does success look like for us here? People want the same.
Yes, but the powers that be would not want that because as Machiavellian, you know what the Machiavellian technique is, and that's to pit two people, the red against the blue. It's this dichotomy because when people are warring with each other, they don't see what's going on in the background.
Yep.
So that's the thing. We need to get smarter as human beings and to go, you know what, maybe you're not doing something for my welfare.
Yep.
Let's look at the end result, like you say. Yep. Let's look at the end result.
I love that. I love that so much. No, I agree wholeheartedly. And I think that's super important. I think it's even more important why people need to get their message out on for themselves. Where do you see the future of all this going? Of authority and that? There's all this AI. Is that going to kill the need for authority figures and expertise?
No, I don't think so.
Recently about what is an expert? Do you have to be ordained by someone to be an expert? Where do you see things over the next sort of 5 years or so?
I think it's like your suitcase full of goodies, right? What do you bring to the table? There is no age limit. I have a client that's 82 and she's got more energy than some 28-year-olds that I know, right? So I think the idea that also shifting the paradigm, the things that we were told in the past had to be, it's not true. Okay. It's not true. And so that's why I love the whole creator economy that's happened through, especially platforms like TikTok. You're talking about people who if they've got a passion and they're consistent, then they can have a whole industry. They can create a really good income for their families and they can do something that they really enjoy. They're passionate about. They're not going to that office on Monday mornings, dreading it, hating getting up for work. So I think that there's going to be a big paradigm shift. And I think what's important for people to do is to just keep adding into that suitcase or that bucket of things that they do really well and focus in on those things, because that's where your expert authority is going to come through. Mm. Those things that you do well, and don't stress about comparing yourself to somebody else again, or be trying to be perfect. We want to be relatable. We want to be authentic. Mm. And that means sometimes stepping outside of the box and going, you know what? This is my perspective on how the world is being run. And I think it's really being run like a shit show.
I love that.
And your tribe, because your tribe is out there and your tribe is like, I think the same thing. I want to be a part of your world. I want to work with you. I want to read your book. I want to listen to your podcast, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. So staying true and staying in your lane, staying true to who you are is more critical now than ever. Because we need to plant that flag, folks, of what we believe is right. Okay. And then call out the things that we think are wrong.
Yeah.
We no more looking at the emperor with the no clothes on and going, oh, what a great suit he's got on. No, we need to say that guy's butt naked.
You got to trust your spark. It blew my mind when I found out that the fertility clinics have documented this over and over. When the sperm and the egg meet, there is a flash of light, sometimes multiple flashes of light, which means that you literally have a spark. You have an inner spark. You have a light inside you, which is speaking to you. And that's, I'm not worried about AI and any of that, because until we can figure out how to
AI doesn't have the spark.
It doesn't have a spark.
Pretty damn smart though.
Sure, but it's just a tool. That's all it is. It's just a tool.
It is. It's just a tool.
And so that spark makes you unique, and it means that you're needed in this world. And Christine, if people want to find out more, if they want to ask questions, if they want to figure out what you're all about and get more of your stuff, where is the best place for them to go?
Best place is to go to my website. I have everything there. I've got all my coaching stuff there that I do, my books, the podcast that I host as well. Everything can be found at expertauthoritycoach.com. That's expertauthoritycoach.com. And if they want to rate their expert authority-ness, just to see where they are on a scale, doesn't matter what industry you're in, you can go to expertauthorityquiz.com and take a quick 10. There's 10 questions. They're fun. You should be asking yourself these questions anyway. These are questions that I, as authority coach, would be asking you. And they're important for you to go through just to see where you land on your expert authority in your field. And it's fun and you'll have a good time doing it. So those are two links, expertauthorityquiz.com and expertauthoritycoach.com.
I love that. So go check out expertauthoritycoach.com, expertauthoritycoiz.com. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a blast as always. Thank you for coming, sharing with us, knowing you got your own show, your own direct reports, your own clients that you could be talking with. Thank you for coming, sharing with my audience tonight so we can all do a little bit better.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank you. Anytime. Thank you.